Welcome back to the Bob Davis Podcasts. In podcast 712, well, it's time. We're going to take the first look at the 2018 so-called midterm or non-presidential year elections. And I'm going to concentrate in this podcast first on the U.S. Senate because there are so many races to talk about. And you'll see why I'm doing it this way in a second here. Already, the storylines and the myths are starting on all of this, depending on your political orientation, which bothers me to begin with. Because what's happening is people on both sides of the political spectrum are being set up for failure or success. And unless you do your own due diligence by listening to this podcast, for example, and I do it for myself, really, and then share it with you, then what's going to happen is you're just going to end up being manipulated or being disappointed or confused and literally being manipulated into being disappointed or confused. So we're going to talk about specifically the Senate, but a little bit of the 2018 election cycle in podcast 712, because once we get through the primary season in June through August, then the election will be on and there'll be so much rhetoric. You'll value this podcast and others like it in the next few weeks. Now, before we get into this, I want to talk about this new company I'm working with, and I'm pretty excited about it. If you're in business, if you're a small business, you know how important it is to get paid. You know, I've heard people say, hey, I was able to get paid right away because I have a payment processor, and it sure is great to have a client in the office or to be working with a client on the scene and be able to say, hey, let's get you paid up so we can do what we need to do. It helps cash flow to get paid faster, and so payment processing is really, really important for that. So if you have a business or if you are developing systems for clients, which include e-commerce websites or e-systems, electronic systems, information systems for clients, and they want to incorporate payment processing, I want you to remember ReliaFund. ReliaFund is a payment processor. They've been providing integrated solutions to get payments cleared for more than two decades. They're pretty extensive in what they can do. They can work fast. They can customize. They can work with developers. They can work with business people to solve payment processing problems. And there are many, and they are unique in terms of the price you pay for credit card processing, the price you pay with banks, and so forth and so on. That's why you talk to someone like ReliaFund. There's no long-term contracts. They're secure. They're technology-focused. 866-243-5040. That's 866-243-5040. Or you can check them out online at ReliaFund.com. That's R-E-L-I-A, ReliaFund.com. If you do call them, you're going to be talking to a human being, Greg Lowry or Kevin Hill at ReliaFund. ReliaFund.com, or click on the banner at the top of the page at thebobdavispodcasts.com. Well, it's going to come up in the Senate race. I'm certainly going to talk about it in this podcast, and that is something called trade protection. It's in the news. There's a lot of talk about it. So if you do foreign manufacturing, then you either ought to reshore your production or you're talking about reshoring your production to avoid tariffs, penalties, and so forth, because they are coming. If you are considering American manufacturing, remember Depot Star. Now, there are reasons to manufacture in Minnesota. There are reasons to manufacture in the United States. One of them is quality. One of them is the degree of intelligence and capability. Depot Star is on it. American engineering, design, and manufacturing. Visit their website at depotstar.com. D-E-P-O-T-S-T-A-R, depotstar.com. A midterm election is when federal offices are up, including members of the United States Congress, and that is 435 seats, so it's the entire House of Representatives. And the full terms for 33 of the 34 of the 100 seats in the U.S. Senate, about a third of the Senate. 36 governors are also being elected during midterm elections, and this is a big number. 87 of the 99 state legislatures in the United States are holding elections as well, for whether they are for state Senate, Assembly, House, or whatever, and not even mentioned are any particular races which are often termed as off-year, municipal, county, and things like that that are up in various parts of the country. Now, In some states like Minnesota, where I am, there are special circumstances. We're certainly not the only state with a quote-unquote special election, because Al Franken resigned and they appointed Lieutenant Governor Tina Smith to the seat. They are obviously going to hold a special election. So we have two Senate seats up for grabs, all the congressional seats, the governor's mansion, and of course the state house. And then there are open races for Senate and Congress across the country. For example, Tennessee, where Senator Bob Corker is retiring from the Senate, now an open seat. All right, we'll talk about that in a couple of minutes. They say all politics are local, and these midterm elections, I believe, really bear that out, even though much of what you're seeing and hearing in the media is national in orientation. And as we're going to talk only about Senate seats, because, you know, to get through all these seats, it doesn't leave enough time to talk about Congress or governor's races. But the big picture is this midterm election is often billed as a sort of referendum on the presidency, no matter who is in office. You have probably already heard the old saw, and I have certainly repeated it many times, that the party that holds the presidency usually loses seats in the midterms. Well, it's kind of true, but really not always. Most recently, George W. Bush gained seats in the midterms right after the 9/11 attacks. Bill Clinton stayed even during the 90s, despite all the crazy controversy about him. John F. Kennedy incurred light losses in, I think, 62. And there are other examples in U.S. history of sitting presidents' parties hanging on to or widening their party's majorities in the midterms in the House and Senate. The thing with 2018 is that there is so much supposed, and I use this term, supposed hate for Donald Trump, that the storyline is that he must take a shellacking. And this is the emerging storyline that Trump is going to lose the Senate, which is entirely possible but not entirely probable, and may lose the House, which is even less probable. And before I start this analysis, this is really a state-by-state analysis of some key races that affect the Senate and the balance of the Senate. There's lots of key issues, national and local, that play into these races. And I'll say this again when I talk about the congressional races in a future podcast, and especially statewide races for governor and for the Senate. And again, we're going to be dealing specifically with the Senate in this podcast. These are not national elections, despite the media pounding away on quote-unquote national issues. So when somebody says so-and-so is going to lose because of such-and-such, most of the time, that is just nonsense. And the people saying it don't even know if that's true. They just heard it from somebody else. Second, what I'm doing here is what I would refer to as real political talk. This is where I don't take sides. I'm not telling you why you have to vote this way or that. I really don't even care how you vote. I certainly don't care who wins the Senate in some other state. It's not that big of a deal to me. I'm doing this because I'm interested in this, just so I know. But this is also what I mean by politics at the granular level. You know, recently somebody said to me that, what do you mean granular? Granular is when you get into the individual races. You get into the contours of a political race in an individual state so that you can understand what is going on in that state. It isn't just saying, well, things are going to go this way because of this, or because I heard this, or because I heard that. It's actually looking up Montana and finding out what's the situation with John Tester. You know, let's talk about that, and let's find out about Montana politics and so forth. And unfortunately, what passes for political talk these days is people screaming at each other on cable TV where they're both partisans, and it's what they call a food fight. What's missing is exactly what the battleground is and the issues in those battlegrounds. Those are the elements that are going to drive these key elections. And the question is, are national issues important? Well, yeah, you know, they're important. Is the president's action in office important? Yes, but those kinds of issues can cut either way, and sometimes they just don't work in an individual statewide race. When pundits tell you Democrats are going to sweep the House or take the Senate because it just seems like a lot of people are upset with Trump, or because they won some special elections recently, or because the Democrats have such and such amount of money in their coffers, or raised more than the Republicans, whatever, it could mean something. It might come to bear, but then again, it might not. So those kinds of these sort of surfacey analyses do not help people understand what is happening in a particular election. And it that's really important on election night when people are shocked because an outcome was not what they were expecting because everyone told them that this was going to happen or that was going to happen. What they are doing is, again, positioning you to think one way or the other. The fact is that no one can tell you the outcome of an election, even for president, and it's certainly not the outcome of, 33 Senate races or 435 House races, the same number of gubernatorial races and 87 House races. But they are creating the storylines because that's how the media works. They create a storyline, they position against a storyline, they create a new storyline, and so forth. A good example is a school shooting. Because there was a school shooting and all these kids are protesting, then that's going to be an issue nationally in all of the Senate races. Well, it might not be. You know, it could be, it might not be. And I'm going to talk about the stupidity of making gun control your issue in some races in a second, or really the stupidity of, as a national party, of requiring members of your party to run on that issue and push on that issue, but we'll get to that. Same with immigration, which is an issue that has a little bit longer shelf life because it isn't tied to some horrible thing happening. And if some horrible thing does happen, it informs the greater, longer shelf life issue of immigration. Or trade. Trade is one of those ethereal things, but it's important in Ohio and it's important in Minnesota's first district, let's say, because it's agricultural or because Trump has pissed off so many people with his Twitter rants or because of the hashtag Me Too thing. That means this party's going to, sweep and there's going to be a Democrat or Republican wave, depending on which election we're talking about. So on Tuesday, November 6th, 2018, we will know the outcome. Actually, we'll know on the 7th, but we'll know the outcome of these races. And it's hard to tell what the issue will be, driving the election until after the election is held. And we can start sorting through polling data and so forth and so on. So for pundits to say, this is what's driving the issue, this is what's going to happen, yada, yada, yada. It certainly keeps people viewing, but I don't think it matters when you're analyzing these races. Now, I'm going to rush through some of this stuff because I don't want to go on too long, but I think what we have to do is actually look at these battlegrounds, and almost nobody does while they have partisans on trying to convince you of yay or nay on any particular issue because they can't. They don't have time to do that when they're doing the food fights. Certainly, I'm not going to talk about 87 state legislative elections, and I might talk about 17 of the 18 so-called battlegrounds, of which Minnesota is considered one, on a later podcast, especially when we talk about congressional districts. But the big money really is the U.S. Senate because the Republicans hold a precarious majority in the Senate, and it's so important. The GOP holds 51 Senate seats while the Democrats hold 47. Two of the Senate seats are held by independents who caucus with Democrats, so the balance is 51-49. And of course, Vice President Mike Pence, the president of the Senate, is a Republican. When there are ties, he casts the deciding vote, as you know. All the big media people are telling you the Democrats are going to win the Senate. I hear it everywhere. And is that true? Well, we'll talk about it. Well, we just had a huge snowstorm, and I was talking about getting your AC checked by Ryan Plumbing and Heating not too long ago. And the reason I did, I knew we were going to have a storm again. The reason I did was because it's something you have to think about. It is going to get warm. It's April in Minnesota, and it's going to get warm. And when you go to turn the AC on, you want to make sure it works. So I'm taking the early, I'm coming in strategically early and saying when it comes to keeping your AC running right, you want reliable service, and you want to have Ryan Plumbing and Heating come out and check your AC, because a lot of times the box will get corroded, or there'll be stuff in there and your AC won't work right, filters and so forth and so on. But it's still cold. We still have freezing pipes and so forth. When you need to make sure that your systems are running right, especially these days at home or your business, or if you're managing an apartment complex, you want reliable service. Don't forget Ryan Plumbing and Heating. They can do corporate, they can do business, and they can do personal at-home stuff. Ryan Plumbing and Heating in St. Paul, 651-224-4771. In Minneapolis, 612-927-6488. Yes, they go back four generations in St. Paul's Frogtown. Quality replacement and repair of all plumbing, heating, and air conditioning systems, residential and business. Have them come out and check your AC to make sure everything runs right, or you can call them. You can do it online, ryanplumbing.com, or you can call them at 651-224-4771 in Minneapolis, 612-927-6488. Online at ryanplumbing.com, ryanplumbing.com, or click on the banner at the top of the page at thebobdavispodcast.com. The Senate supposedly is held in a precarious balance right now, with Republicans controlling 51 seats and the vice president. It's one of the reasons it makes it so hard for the president to quote-unquote get what he wants, because all of the 51 senators aren't necessarily on the same political page due to differences in their state. And the contour of this particular election is interesting because the Democrats are defending more seats than Republicans. There are seven battleground states where Democrats currently hold seats. Only two Republican states are considered battleground states where Republicans hold are the incumbents. So right off the bat, the Democrats are defending more seats than the Republicans. Now, for Democrats, in terms of vulnerabilities, first on the list is Minnesota, where Tina Smith, the former lieutenant governor under Mark Dayton, is fighting to hold on to her Senate seat after being appointed to the seat that Al Franken vacated. Florida Senator Bill Nelson is running against Governor Rick Scott for the Senate, which is a potentially tough race because Scott is a more conservative and more popular candidate than, for example, Connie Mack, who was a friend of Bill Clinton's, and Clinton famously campaigned for, I believe, against Rick Scott at one point. In Missouri, Claire McCaskill is up for re-election. A primary has to be held to determine both her future as well as who her Republican challenger will be. So predicting the outcome of that election is a waste of time until there is a primary. And Missouri is another one of those states with really four distinct regions and four distinct different political ideas. In Montana, Democrat John Tester is up for re-election. There's one poll which shows a 5% advantage for an as-yet-to-be-determined Republican opponent, but the state leans to the purple side. Let's just say that for statewide races. Montana used to be very conservative because, especially in the western part of the state, well, really statewide, you have ranching interests, but now you've got ski areas and you got environmentalists. It's kind of like northern Minnesota, where, you know, now with all of the hippies going up to Ely, it has changed the state. And environmental is as much of an issue in the northern part of the state of Minnesota as mining, basically. And so the miners don't necessarily come down on the side of the environmentalists and vice versa. And that isn't a perfect dissertation of the political environment in the northern part of the state of Minnesota, but it gives you an idea of these very tight, interesting little wrinkles in different regions of different states. In North Dakota, Heidi Heitkamp is in what has been described as a tough race because she's a Democrat senator in a very red state. And that's it. That's the reason why she's in a tough race. Well, I don't know if she's in a tough race. Certainly, there's going to be a primary in June. So right now, there's no official Republican challenge. And we're going to have to determine the contours of that race once there is a challenge after the Republicans select a candidate. And I'm going to talk about North Dakota when we talk about gun control here in a second. But then we come to West Virginia, Ohio, and Indiana, which are considered Trump country. And this is another reason they say, well, these are vulnerable seats. And we'll start with Ohio, which Trump won by something like 10 points in 2016. Ohio Senator Sherrod Brown is running for re-election. And so it goes that because Trump won the state, he's in trouble. He is the only Democrat elected for statewide office in Ohio. But you have to remember, Ohio Republicans are generally moderate. Think John Kasich. And while this is Trump country, supposedly, there's also still a Republican primary in May, with all the Republican potential candidates polling somewhere between 5 and 20 points below Brown. It could be a vulnerable seat. It could not be a vulnerable seat for Democrats. It just depends on what happens with this primary. Let's talk about West Virginia. So in West Virginia, former Governor Joe Manchin is defending his seat. Again, a Republican primary is in the offing, so we don't know who the challenger is going to be. This is also billed as Trump country, but this is a state that went for Kennedy in 1960, famously. It is a mining state. It is a business state. It is, you know, there's all kinds of things going on in West Virginia. And it also has a very long history of corruption, which I think is actually fascinating. But Manchin is considered a moderate Democrat. I think of him, I often refer to him as a conservative Democrat. And he is being challenged in an upcoming primary by a Bernie Sanders endorsed candidate who is also a coal miner's daughter. And of course, Manchin, and this is, I had to look this up, but Joe Manchin certainly has made his bones defending miners as well. He's a former governor and a sitting senator, and he's fended off many challenges. And so when we think of Republicans who represent mining interests as a lock, you know, Manchin also has pretty good credentials when it comes to the miners in West Virginia as well. So while Trump tries to go after Manchin, even when he's courting his vote in the Senate for things that Manchin is prone to vote for, he's, you know, in a situation, for example, you know, gun control is a perfect issue because West Virginia is not a state. It's pretty much a Second Amendment state, right? So Manchin is someone that could vote for and with Trump on a gun control issue, but might go against him on some other issue. And this is one of those races that we have to see the contours of. Once the primary is over, then you're going to actually see who's running against Manchin. Indiana is literally flying over country for people in the coastal Democrat strongholds. And so people don't think about Indiana when they think about politics. But Indiana is a dynamic state. I have been up and down and across Indiana many times in the last couple of years. And I can tell you what's going on in Indiana is actually fascinating. Lots of building, lots of businesses moving, lots of companies moving into Indiana. And I can attest to the fact that the state is growing industrially due to tax policies and right-to-work policies. Democratic Senator Joe Connolly is the Sherrod Brown of Indiana. This is a state that is generally viewed as Republican. Trump took Indiana by something like 8 points. But when you consider the northeastern Indiana and to a lesser degree Indianapolis area, Indiana can get kind of purple. Think Evan Bayh, for example, a Democrat senator. Of course, again, Connolly is a Democrat in a state which has always been fairly Republican. Well, it's kind of like Illinois, although less pronounced. Southern Indiana is very Republican. Northern Indiana, and again, particularly northwestern Indiana, not northeastern, but northwestern Indiana. So Elkhart and Gary are definitely not Republican. Here again, a primary is scheduled for May 8th, which is going to select the Republican candidate. But Republicans in general view this seat as the best chance for a pickup. So we'll just have to see about that one. In Florida, Democrat Bill Nelson is running for re-election. First, there will be a primary in August, but that has not stopped the media from polling a race between Governor Rick Scott and Nelson and calling it close. And Rick Scott does not have hasn't won the primary yet. So without a primary, it's pretty hard to have a two-way race, right? Certainly, Rick Scott leads the potential Republican challengers, but there is also talk that Roger Stone, Trump and Russia Mueller probe fame, may run. We'll see. I would imagine it's probably going to be a Scott-Nelson race, and that's a tight race because Rick Scott is very popular in Florida, and Nelson leads by a thin margin. Again, Florida, a state which is viewed as being conservative. But again, depending on what you're talking about, so, you know, Western Florida tends to be very Midwestern because people move there from the Midwest. Eastern Florida tends to be a little bit more New York, Detroit, you know, Chicago, people moving to Miami and so forth. And I don't want to get into that, but, you know, Florida is one of those states that's hard to pin down politically now. Conventional wisdom, no, because people think of it as a super conservative state, but and a bunch of crackers living in Florida, literally. But there's a lot of, I often refer to Naples as New Jersey with palm trees, right? On the Republican side, we'll start with Nevada, long considered a lock for Republicans, and that has changed in recent years with the growth of Las Vegas and maybe to a second extent, Reno. We all remember, and Lake Tahoe, we all remember how Obama organized the state and the workers in Vegas for his effort. And of course, Hillary Clinton won Nevada in 2016. So Senator Dean Heller is the only Republican serving as a senator in the state that voted Democrat in 2016. He is essentially the Sherrod Brown of Nevada. He was supposedly planning to run for governor this year, then decided instead to run for re-election to the Senate. Jackie Rosen is a U.S. representative from Nevada and is running, I believe, unopposed in a primary for the Democrats in June. And the only polling is partisan, and it shows Rosen potentially defeating Heller by double digits. Again, I wouldn't take that to the bank. Here's the thing. Heller was appointed to the Senate by Governor Brian Sandoval, which makes this his first real election for senator. He's also a former U.S. representative from the Silver State, and he replaced Harry Reid, who was very controversial and had kind of blackened the Democrat name for Senate in Nevada. Certainly, there are many years of Reid's service to the state, but there's a lot of interesting media and press and sub-Rosa talk, let's just say, in Nevada about Harry Reid's adventures. In Arizona, a Republican Senator Jeff Flake is retiring, and a primary in August is going to determine the so-called combatants in the 2018 Senate race. We don't know what's going to happen with John McCain, but he isn't up for re-election this time around. So that could come up as a special race between now and then or after this 2018 race. And this one is wide open. So saying a Democrat is going to pick this up is the height of fantasy at this point, I think. Sheriff Joe Arpaio is running, or Arpaio is running in the primary. So is Representative Martha McSally. Polls show McSally as the front runner for Republicans right now, but Kelly Ward, a former U.S. representative and senatorial candidate, has been showing some polling strength as well. So we'll see how that comes down. And again, whether or not this is a pickup for Democrats is going to depend on who actually ends up running for that seat. On the Democrat side, a former judge in Iowa State, Representative Richard Sherzan, is running, as is Kirsten Sinema, current U.S. representative for Arizona's 9th District, which is basically West Scottsdale, Mesa, on down to the northwestern part of Chandler. Sinema has raised, I guess that's how you say her name, almost $6 million so far, which is substantially more than her Democrat opponent. And again, the contours of that race are not going to be determined until after the primary, which I think is in June. Maybe it's in August. I don't know. There is one battleground where I would add here, which is Tennessee, where Republican Senator Bob Corker is retiring. There's going to be a primary to select candidates on August 2nd, 2018, because this is now an open seat. Suddenly, there's all this speculation that this is going to be a pickup for the Democrats in Tennessee. Polling shows potential candidate Marsha Blackburn, the current U.S. representative for Tennessee's 7th District, in a close race with the former governor and former mayor of Nashville, Phil Bredesen. B-R-E-D-E-S-E-N. And I would imagine that he's a strong candidate because of being a former governor and a former mayor of Nashville. There is some talk that Corker will step back in and challenge Blackburn because he can win, quote unquote. I think Bob Corker is the former mayor of Chattanooga. So that's another interesting kind of thing. And of course, you've got that whole Metro thing with Metro Tennessee, Nashville. But Tennessee is certainly not, I would say Tennessee is a pretty solid red state. In fact, most analysts say that this is, you know, certainly not going to be a pickup for Democrats. But that doesn't stop people on national media suddenly saying, oh, you know, the sky is falling in Tennessee. If you take Blackburn and Bredesen, they are literally neck and neck if you average the polls taken so far, each with about 42.5% of those polled. So saying that suddenly this is a Democrat pickup is the height of stupidity as far as I'm concerned. Finally, in Maine, former Governor Angus King, an independent, is running for re-election for the Senate. What's unique about this race actually is that there is a ranked choice voting wrinkle. Voters approved it for so-called federal elections. It was thrown out by a judge, and a referendum on ranked choice voting is scheduled for June. If the ranked choice voting wins, it would be used in the Maine Senate race for federal office, I think. And so that would be the first time for federal office, to my understanding. And though then it might affect the outcome of the race. You know, the only possible real challenge to King here would come from he is the governor of Maine, Paul LePage, a Republican who has made himself famous for Trump-like expositions, stunts. For example, saying all the drug addicts in Maine were black and Hispanic, and he was keeping a binder to prove it. For storming off the stage at one point and attacking the media, all things Trump loves. And this is why Trump is asking LePage to run. But nobody expects King to lose. And I don't even understand why some would consider this even a battleground race, probably because of the potential for a Paul LePage candidacy for the Senate. So those are the broad contours of the battlegrounds for the U.S. Senate. Obviously, you can hear that most of the challenges are, in fact, on the Democrat side. But I don't know how deep those challenges are. And this is going to change. In some states, it'll be taken out of the battleground column. Some states will be taken out of the battleground column. Some states will be put in there. For example, Tennessee. But on election night, there are always going to be surprises, and surprises in states that aren't even on this list of battlegrounds that no one can see right now. And these races are considered key, these battleground races, because the margins already favor one of the parties in several of the other races that aren't listed here. So, you know, in some states where you have strong Democrat or Republican candidates, nobody's going to consider it a battleground. But when you have wild card states like Nevada and Minnesota, well, then that makes it more interesting. And of course, that provides us with the surprises on election night. A quick word about the issues driving these elections. And this is where people get their information watching TV news. They're not going to learn much about Senate races. First of all, the polling is scattered and it's sparing. You know, they don't do as many polls as they do for presidential races, for Senate races. And if they do, they're not always very good polls. You would think that an election for U.S. senator would be driven by national issues because, of course, senators vote on foreign policy, presidential appointments, treaties. They pass budgets in important House races on through to the president with revisions and, of course, with tight margins in the Senate. If they don't pass something like an ACA repeal or a tax bill, it will fail. But this, and this is the thing, actually, these are statewide elections, these Senate races. And in statewide elections, you know, I've traveled the states. In fact, you should listen to the podcast where I talk about regional differences, because when you actually are on the ground in these states, first of all, they're huge. And second of all, let's just take a state like Colorado, which isn't on this list at all. But, you know, Eastern Colorado is very much like Nebraska. Western Colorado is dramatically different geographically and socially, because you have Denver, you have Boulder, but in eastern Colorado, you have a much more, you know, prairie, mountain west kind of approach. And in other parts of the state, you have ranchers and things of that nature, depending on what you're talking about, Colorado Springs or Denver. So national issues be damned in these states where local issues, meaning state issues, are extremely important. South Carolina is another example. Columbia is very much like Tennessee, whereas when you get down to the coastal states, it's a whole different kind of experience. So there's different issues driving different parts of the state. Minnesota, you have mining and you have environmental issues up north. Down south in the southwestern part of the state, you have farming issues and you have development issues, and roads become very important. And senators are really key in some of those local issues. This is one of the reasons you get moderate candidates in the Senate, just like you do governors, because these crazy, you know, right-wing or left-wing candidates just can't muster and pull together all these different disparate parts in a constituency, whether it's Republican or Democrat. And because states have different political constituencies in different regions, well, they're all quirky. Some are more quirky than others, but they're all quirky. And this is where really, I mean, I think the really great politicians are visible in Senate and gubernatorial races because they've got to knit together these different issues. This is where we get into gun control as a great example. The Democrats seem to be pushing an envelope of issues, implying that Republicans are soft on gun control, women's issues, minorities, and too hard on immigrants. You know, they've got the students out marching, and they've got the women out marching, and they are mainly running against the president, such as he is. And I'm not making judgments about the president. I'm just saying they're running against Trump. And this is one of the reasons you see Trump saying and doing some things that might be considered weird. Because on the gun control issue, what is a Heidi Heitkamp going to do in North Dakota, which is a state that's firmly in the Second Amendment camp? She's not going to touch it with a 10-foot pole, despite being exhorted to because she's a Democrat, and we just assume that all Democrats are anti-gun. Or Tennessee, and especially West Virginia, where Joe Manchin is running, these are strong Second Amendment states. What does a potential Democrat challenger in Arizona say about immigration, for example? It depends on what the potential voters are and where they are. And don't expect that just because someone is a Latino in Arizona that they are pro opening the borders. When it comes to trade and trade protection, you can see that Trump's stance on NAFTA and tariffs While I don't agree with it, are directed toward Indiana and Ohio, where such trade agreements are literally hated. So while people are talking Trump and Stormy Daniels or the intellects in Minnesota, California, New York, and on this podcast are decrying his stance on trade, he is directing his efforts to Ohio, Indiana, West Virginia, Northern Arizona, Tennessee, and Montana, Missouri, North Dakota, and Florida. If the Republicans can hang on to what they have, if they get one pickup, then they have made the president's job immensely easier. And then suddenly we get back to he's playing three-dimensional chess. If you gain more than one seat, great, even better. If you gain one and lose one, well, then you've stayed even. You've just changed designations depending on who wins and who loses. Now, I can't predict what is going to happen in these states, but I've traveled enough to know, as I just said, that certain states like Minnesota, for example, used to be a firm lock for Democrats, but now Minnesota's 8th district is put in play by two issues, mining and gun control. And, NAFTA and foreign trade. And then in the South, in Minnesota, Minnesota's 1st district is put in play by these potential Chinese tariffs on agricultural products. And who do you think farmers are going to blame? They're not going to blame the Chinese. Same in North Dakota with other kinds of issues. So when it comes to national stuff, and when it comes to the national stuff that seems to be the most lurid with the protesting and everything else, these things don't play in southern Missouri or, you know, in northern Minnesota or western Minnesota or things, places and things that you would consider to be traditional Democrat strongholds. Now, in in Hennepin and Ramsey County, they are strangleholds. But the state of Minnesota as a whole, in terms of winning a Senate election, if you do well as a Republican in the 8th district, if you do well, which is the northern part of the state, if you do well in the southwest and the western part of the state, you can conceivably overwhelm a Democrat advantage in Hennepin and Ramsey counties, which is Minneapolis and St. Paul. So this is why the mainstream media's and really all media's predictions about this is going to affect that and that's going to affect this, very hard to say when you're looking at states where there might be a mining issue, a water issue, you know, an oil drilling issue or something to that effect. The other thing is, and I just want to say this, not all these challengers are very strong. Just because someone is well-funded and challenging doesn't make them a strong challenge to a potential sitting senator. A good example is Ted Cruz. The Democrats seem to want to add Texas to the pickup column or the in-play column. And, I think that really is silly because Ted Cruz is doing very well in Texas and is very well-funded, and I don't think you could put that in the pickup or in the in-play column. Maybe, but we'll see. Finally, on the national level, the Russian investigation really has not been bearing fruit. I think Democrats really hoped and depended on that. Yes, Democrats who hate Trump are certainly not going to vote Republican, but so what? They never were. This is about, for Trump, this is about polling people in these areas using populist techniques when it comes to trade, when it comes to defense, when it comes to the issues that really are with these little people, so to speak, common people who, quote unquote, are hurting, that the media tends to ignore. Hence the surprise when Roseanne puts out a new show and tries to reflect the working class in, Illinois. Trump does not help win Senate races. It certainly didn't help Republicans when they were screaming Clinton, Clinton, Clinton back in the 90s. So that's kind of the contours of the Senate race, and if it changes, I'll talk about it. But I've laid down a baseline, and the next podcast I do, not the very next podcast, but the next really political podcast, I'm going to go over the really important congressional races, and I'll do some more study on that. But so far, this is kind of where we're at with the Senate races. And, you know, again, we've got to wait for the primaries to resolve. So the next turning point, the next waypoint for Senate races is really June, July, August, when these primaries are held and we know who's running against who. And there will actually be some decent polling in some of those states. And again, I don't make predictions. I don't tell you who's going to win because I don't know who's going to win. I can tell you what the probabilities are. I can tell you what the possibilities are. I don't know. And when it comes down to the math concerning, or I should say the arithmetic concerning who controls the Senate, we are not going to be able to say that until we can say with some degree of, confidence where we're going to be at with some of these Senate races. And I don't even know if that's possible. So the next waypoint when we talk about the Senate will be in July and August. But if you're interested, you know, I would just caution accepting storylines as the way these Senate races are, because I think when you get on the ground in individual states and you start looking at these, you're going to find out that it's going to be very different. And I'll just very quickly use Minnesota as an example, because I know it best because I've lived here. You know, we don't know who's actually going to be running yet, because we also have to have a primary, who's going to be running for the seat that Tina Smith currently occupies. But I would predict that it's going to be a fairly moderate Republican that's going to run, because this is not a state that elects, you know, really strong, quote unquote, right wing candidates to national office or for the governor's mansion. They tend to be very moderate in their Republican choices. So in Minnesota, expect a moderate Republicans to run. Now, I don't know. Does that mean the Republican wins the race? Hard to tell. I do think that Democrats differing from Republicans in the state tend to be a little bit more extreme in terms of their potential candidates, but they run to the center. They run as moderates. So that's just an example of what's going to be repeated in 33 other states in this election sequence. Yeah, very quick. You know, it is going to get warm, and you're going to want to make sure that your AC works before you turn it on. So I'm just getting the pitch out real early for Ryan Plumbing to come and check your AC to make sure it works. It's got to be at least 70, but if you do need service, think Ryan Plumbing and Heating in St. Paul, 651-224-4771, in Minneapolis, 612-927-6488, online at ryanplumbing.com. Thanks for listening to the Bob Davis Podcasts on Stitcher.com for Android devices, iTunes, the grand daddy of them all, tuned in, blogtalkradio.com, liking, sharing, favoriting, and following on Facebook and Twitter. We're also on Google Play, right off the page at thebobdavispodcast.com with the streaming. Also appreciate your donations, Wayne Hindermeister at thebobdavispodcast.com for Mobile Podcast Command. Thanks again for listening to Podcast 712 as we get ready to just lay out the contours of the 2018 Senate race. We'll talk Congress next time and gubernatorial and state houses and whatever else I can find. Thanks again for listening to the Bob Davis Podcasts. I ain't got nobody that I can depend on. I ain't got nobody that I can depend on. Can depend on.